I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
On What's Next today, we revisit a guest that we've had him on before. Actually, it's Ben Hillegas. Ben is the executive director of the Buffalo Educational Opportunity Center here in downtown Buffalo. Ben, welcome back, and nice to have you back. I guess when we were talking, when we first had you on, you were on the job about 7 days.
That's correct, Jay. Thank you so much for having me back. It's a real pleasure to be back here with you. It was somewhat of a painful exercise, but I re-listened to the original appearance yesterday.
They were more painful for me, but that's another story.
No, not at all. You were great. I realized I was kind of playing with house money because I was only on the job for 2 weeks. But at this point, I probably need to know what I'm talking about. So we'll see how that goes.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think it's interesting because, I mean, just overall, and well, maybe we just talk about the EOC just a little bit to get into it, just the overview of it, and then we can go back into it for those few people who haven't heard, didn't hear the first episode between us.
Absolutely. So the Buffalo EOC has been around for 51 years at this point. It was founded by Arthur O'Eve. He spearheaded legislation that created both the Educational Opportunity Center program as well as the Educational Opportunity Program, which is EOP. So at that point, 51 years ago, there was 4 EOCs across New York State. Over the last 51 years, that system has grown to include 12. So there are EOCs in Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, the Capital District, the 5 boroughs, and Westchester and Long Island. Each one of those EOCs is affiliated with a SUNY institution in their community. For us, it's the University of Buffalo. Downstate, it's CUNY. There are community colleges. There are state colleges. But we have a wonderful relationship with the University of Buffalo. I actually report to the provost, and he and his office are incredibly supportive of the Buffalo EOC, which we appreciate a great deal. And what we do at the Buffalo Educational Opportunity Center is provide free vocational and educational programs to members of our community. There is eligibility requirements, primarily financial eligibility requirements. So anyone who qualifies for public assistance automatically qualifies. And then we accept folks who are up to 250% of the poverty line. And we serve this year, we're on track to serve about 1,200 students by the end of our academic calendar, which will be at the end of June. And we provide GED, ESOL. We provide academic foundational review courses, which is kind of a backbone of all of the programming because we work to get people up to a level where they can take advantage of other opportunities. And then we have a relatively broad range of vocational training programs that we are adding to and that I'd like to talk about later.
Sure. And it's interesting just to hear you mention it. People are eligible if they're, up to 250% of the poverty level here. Unfortunately, I would think that includes a tremendous amount of people.
Absolutely. I mean, we all know that, you know, Buffalo has disproportionate levels of poverty as compared to other cities. And, I mean, there's a lot of eligible people, and we are very happy to serve all of those folks.
All right, let's get into some of the programs. You came in with a fresh set of eyes. That must have been interesting in its own regard. I mean, maybe even kind of take a look back. You came in looking at it when we talked back in June of last year, a certain way, what you saw then, what you see now. What are some of the differences that you see?
It's a great question. I mean, one of the things I have learned over the course of this almost year is just, and really it reinforced things that I kind of already knew. How essential the EOC is. I mean, I have just seen firsthand how absolutely foundational it is to a lot of the things that happen in our community, which I knew, but just seeing it firsthand and being a part of it really has reinforced that. And then,
when you say you knew, I mean, what did you understand about it?
Well,
I mean, you were at the Matt Urban Center, so you know
Matt
what it's like dealing with.
When I was at the Matt Urban Center, but more specifically, my many years working in youth services.
Okay.
And I had been involved in juvenile justice in Erie County and was pretty connected to the EOC because there were a lot of young people that we worked with in family court, okay, in probation, in detention, who needed an alternative setting, right? And the EOC provided that for them. So I was very familiar. But again, you never know until you're actually
right inside.
Right inside. And then just, you know, the breadth of all of the things that we do to support folks became more apparent. And it's just been reinforced almost on a daily basis since I started. Just, again, how essential it is to so many aspects of what happens in this community. And then the second thing is the resilience of people, the resilience of our students. I mean, the stories that I have heard from our students individually, and then what I have seen them achieve in the short time that I've been there. I'm a social worker by education. I've been a social worker for 17 years. I do that because I firmly believe and know that all people have the real ability to change their lives, to transform, to improve, to become better. And at the EOC, I see that every day. And it just, again, reinforces that knowledge that people are so resilient, especially people here in Buffalo.
So I love to hear stories. And I think you like to talk about the success stories, and I'm sure there are many. But maybe let's just touch upon some folks that you've encountered and how maybe you've seen quick changes or real dramatic changes in individuals.
It's a great question. I mean, there's quick changes and there's also long changes.
Sure, right? Of course.
There's folks who come to the EOC who have been coming to the EOC for 3, 4, 5 years, right, working on their GED, and remain persistent in doing it and struggle for a variety of reasons to be able to achieve it, but keep coming and stay connected to their instructors and take advantage of the opportunities that we provide that are outside of the classroom, you know, whether it's tutoring or other support services. And one thing about the GED is that you can take each of the subject areas independently. You can walk into a GED testing center and just take your math portion.
Okay.
You don't have to take them all at the same time. And as you pass the math portion, you're done. You've passed that math portion, you never have to do it again. So we actually, starting in January, we introduced a new GED model. Most GED programs, you are reviewing all 4 subject areas, math, science, history, and reading. You're reviewing them all at the same time, right? And then you're sitting down and taking the test. It's overwhelming, and it can be a lot for a lot of people. So if you sit down and take the GED, and you pass 2 sections, you don't pass the other two, then you're good with the two that you passed. So then people go back into another review class, and they're taking everything again, and they're taking, you know, more content related to the sections that they've already passed. So we've now broken it up. We are giving people the opportunity to come in and just review math and then just take their math portion, or just take science and just take their science portion. And it just allows them to do it in more bite-sized chunks and, you know, demonstrate success and then build on that success. And a lot of those people, several of them, who've been with us for 3 or 4 or 5 years and have struggled, are now having success with that model.
That's great.
It's incredible. It's exactly what we anticipated. We didn't make it up. We based it off of...
I was going to ask that. Yeah. Did you learn from one of the other EOCs?
That's precisely right. We learned from the Manhattan EOC, who started doing this a couple of years ago, and they had data. They had evidence that it was successful, that their completion rates were increasing and that folks were having more success. So actually, both our relationship with the Manhattan EOC and then our relationship with the SUNY Office of Academic and Workforce Development, which oversees and administers EOCs, helped us to implement this program. And we're just thrilled with the results. So that's one example of the changes I've seen. Without getting into details, I mean, I've spoken to a handful of folks. We have many folks at the EOC who are immigrants and refugees.
Okay.
But I've had some pretty detailed conversations with a few of them. And, you know, we have people at the EOC who are taking vocational programs, fulfilling kind of lifelong dreams, who've spent up to 20 years in refugee camps in various parts throughout the world. Which is, I mean, it's very difficult, I think, for you or I to really comprehend or understand what that experience would be like. I mean, a year, 2 years, 5 years, but 20 years in a refugee camp, and then to come to this country and have to start over completely and find themselves at a place like the EOC where they've learned English, where they have increased their skills in some academic subject areas and taken a vocational training program in a field that is something that they always aspired to, where they're going to get an entry-level job, but a good entry-level job. And then, you know, there are people who are middle-aged, you know, later in life, who have told me, like, I always wanted to be a nurse, right? Never thought it was possible. Mm. But I've seen some of these people who are now, you know, not that far away from possibly being able to achieve that dream. You know, there's more school ahead of them. There's more commitment that has to be made. But I can see that now they actually believe that that's possible because of the success that they've had. And I mean, it's probably the most gratifying thing I can imagine, knowing that folks who have had those experiences, who have had those, you know, just unthinkable challenges in their life, are now in a place where they may be able to achieve a dream that they've had for decades that they didn't think was attainable.
It's obviously great to see that they're getting to that next level. I'm curious, though, just trying to, you know, get to the core of things a little bit. I know in the Buffalo Public Schools, for example, when they're dealing with their student population of whether, you know, immigrant or refugee children coming in, and one of the big issues is just determining where they can place people, you know, how they can, you know, what levels they can start at. So how do you go about, how does your center go about figuring out, okay, you know, somebody's coming in, like you said, they could be, maybe they lived here, they were in a refugee camp for 20 years or whatever the case may be. How do you go through finding out? That sounds like it's got to be its own problem.
That's a great question. We spend a lot of time on assessment for all of the people who come through our doors. And immigrants and refugees and people who are non-native English speakers have a very specific assessment that they go through. It's a very interesting question, though, Jay, because it is a place where we are evolving. There are multiple levels of English as a second language courses that people can take, but there's also a level, like a pre-level. There's a level one, level two, level three. Okay. But then there's a large group of people who don't fit into any of those three categories because they may have low literacy in their own language, right? So the assessment becomes difficult, and the ability to teach them even at the most introductory level is limited because of their low literacy in their native language.
Right. And
there's not a lot of programs or interventions for people who are coming in at that level. So we are actually, we did a few things. In January, in addition to launching the new GED program, we also launched some additional courses and sections of ESL. Number one, because there is a lot of demand out there right now, and we needed to increase our capacity so we could welcome more students, but also because we needed to address these people who are being assessed below the most basic level. So it is evolving. What we did initially was we created a lab, like an open enrollment lab that we offered in the evening. So folks could walk in at any time throughout the quarter or the semester, and we would immediately place them in the lab, which is not always the case for a course that's, you know, happening over the course of a quarter, seven and a half weeks. Once the course closes, it's pretty much closed, and you wouldn't want to throw somebody in there. So this is an open enrollment lab where they get more individual one-on-one tutoring, and you're really kind of teaching the basics. You're teaching, you know, how to read a clock, how to, you know, have a financial transaction at a store, things like that. But it's just more individualized, more one-on-one, trying to build up that capacity. So we did that in January. It wasn't like we did it because it was the best we could do at the time. We wanted to be able to capture these people, and we wanted to be able to start building up their skills and abilities. But our chief academic person at the EOC has just completed a new program proposal that they're submitting to SUNY, specifically for the pre-basic level.
Yep.
Based on input and feedback that we've got from SUNY, the chief academic person at the office that we work with at SUNY has extensive experience in ESL. They were an ESL teacher. So we've developed a very intentional, very specific program for folks who are coming in at these pre-levels, and we'll be implementing that, if not in the summer, in the fall. So, again, it's just part of this broader strategy of really... I told you before we got on the air, like, the initial approach when I started for the first, let's say, 6 months was to make sure we were doing what we already do as well as we can and doing as much of it as we can. So the GED and the ESL enhancement and expansion is just what's occurred through January and now, you know, ongoing into the fall. Examples of that. And I'm very happy with how much more capacity we've been able to add in the innovative new programs, and it's really helping to better serve our students and give them more options and give us more options to better meet their individual needs when they come through our door.
We're speaking with Ben Hillegas today on What's Next, the executive director of the EOC here in Buffalo. It's interesting to hear how when we start talking about, like you said, these, when you put levels of literacy in, we're talking about somebody who's trying to learn English as a second language, and you start really considering the complications involved, it shows kind of that how, I guess, flexible and nimble your staff has to be when it comes to addressing the needs of the students who are showing up.
It's a very astute observation, Jay, because I use the word flexible all the time when I'm talking to partners and people who are, you know, learning about the EOC. I think we're designed to be flexible. We're designed to be adaptive because the needs of the community change so frequently. We're positioned to be able to move quickly and adapt and change to meet those needs. So I love that you said that, because it really is something that I reiterate time and time again. But it's something that I've absorbed and learned in my year at the EOC.
Like, right.
We have that flexibility. When a partner comes to us and says, you know, we've identified this need in the community, we have this evidence to support that this is something that we should do, we want to implement this particular program, we have A, B, and C, do you have D and E, right?
Right.
And if I don't, although oftentimes we do, I can say we can do that because of the flexibility that we're afforded by just the way the EOCs are set up.
It's interesting because you mentioned the partners bringing this need to your attention, or perhaps a need that they didn't know that the EOC already had been taken care of. But you did talk to me a little bit before we went on there about the different partnerships that you've seen and experienced since you've been there in this less than a year. What about this? So let's just take an example then. Okay, a partner who comes in. All right, they say, here's a need in the community. What might that be, and you know, how then do you adjust?
So there's a lot of examples. I'll just pick one relatively at random. So the Kensington Project, right?
Ah.
Which is controversial in its own right. But I think we all recognize at this point that something is going to happen at some point in the
relative. A large-scale construction project,
right? Mm-hmm. $1 billion price tag on a large-scale construction project in Buffalo on the east side that hopefully repairs harm that was done, you know, decades ago by poor or, you know, intentionally malicious policy choices.
We'll save that tangent for another conversation. Yes.
So the Department of Transportation, New York State DOT, has in the past worked with the Syracuse EOC on the I-81 project,
right,
which is very similar to the Kensington Project in Buffalo. Another, you know, expressway built through the middle of a city that they want to tear down in order to, you know, reconnect people and have a different kind of transportation network in the city. So because of what EOCs do and the nature of EOCs, the DOT worked with Syracuse years ago and ongoing today to stand up a kind of a basic introductory road construction training program.
Oh, all right.
That is occurring in Syracuse now. It's been very successful. They came to us related to the Kensington Project and said, hey, we're working with Syracuse on this program. Would you be able to do something similar? Would you be able to replicate a road construction program that Syracuse is doing? When I started, I knew I wanted to get back into trades. The EOC in the past had a very large portfolio of trades programs. We know how much need there is in the community to fill, you know, all sorts of construction jobs. So it was a missed opportunity for the EOC not to be involved in trades. So already wanted to do it. DOT approaches us. It's a relatively basic program, 6.5 to 7 weeks, getting people prepared to be able to get jobs on with contractors on road construction jobs.
Wow.
So we are in development of that right now. So in terms of partnership, it's DOT,
sure,
right? It's the Syracuse EOC that's providing us with resources and information, curriculum, all of that stuff. We're very excited about the DOT project, first of all. And our intention is to get this program up and running by the summertime. July or August, we'll hopefully launch our first cohort. We'll be promoting it quite a bit. We'll be recruiting. It'll be something that you'll probably see somewhere out there, either on social media or billboards or signs or flyers. And it's our first foray back into trades, and it's really exciting. And because of the nature of the Kensington Project. Like, in my opinion, no matter what happens, the most important thing is that people from the impacted communities are able to in some way benefit from the construction
project. Right, because there has been a criticism, and it's been aired on this show, that I'll try to quote it as best. It's a jobs project in an impoverished neighborhood for white people. And there, I think, is some truth to that when you look at some of the local trades here. I don't want to overgeneralize and be, you know, criticized for that. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of truth to that. So you're saying there's an opportunity through the EOC to connect more people to more opportunities, and opportunities that pay pretty good money on these construction jobs.
Prevailing wage, yes, and really are also a pathway, an on-ramp to jobs in construction fields,
sure.
Right? Like a career. So we could take people who have no construction experience and get them ready to get on one of these road crews, hopefully earn prevailing wage for as long as the project goes on, and then use that as a springboard to continue in construction trades into the future and have a career. So that's the way we're looking at it. And I give DOT a lot of credit. They're being very intentional about this. They want to do this for the reasons that you described. They want to make sure that people from the impacted community are able to benefit from this billion-dollar investment that's going to be coming to Buffalo.
They been able to, you talked about Syracuse, and I'm sure you're only somewhat familiar to it, but as best you understand, they've been able to successfully make that connection, or is that something that you don't totally know?
They have. And
okay.
I traveled to Syracuse in order to meet with folks there and actually observed their program and met with some of the students and met with the instructors, really immersed myself in it because, again, this is something we're taking very seriously and we're very committed to getting it up and running as quickly as possible. And it's highly successful because, you know, the companies, the contractors, the trades, they need people.
There's no doubt about that.
So if we can get them prepared to walk through the door and generally have some idea what they're doing, right? Like, they're not coming in totally green, totally fresh.
Right.
They've used hand tools, they've poured concrete, they've mixed asphalt, they've used power tools, they've been on some job sites, they're in good shape, right? Like, that is...
So your program is going to offer that type of exposure?
That's the intention,
okay.
Yes. It's primarily an exposure program. There's some classroom components. We want folks to, you know, be competent in some construction math, to get OSHA 10 certified, so they have all of their safety certifications. A couple other classroom components that I'm not thinking of, but then in a workshop, getting familiar with hand tools, getting familiar with power tools, again, learning how to create concrete forms, mix concrete, pour concrete, same thing with asphalt. And then ideally, what they do in Syracuse is they have partnerships with, out there it's one of their partners is the Municipal Housing Authority, and there's a housing development directly across the street from their workshop. So when the Housing Authority has jobs, especially related to concrete, pavement, things like that, they go over there and they either do it themselves or they assist. So they get that on-the-job training. We would want to do the same thing. And if we can't, if there's not jobs available, which is sometimes the case in Syracuse, you just do it in-house, right? You just do the best you can with... in your own workshop, doing the same kind of jobs that you would do in a real job. But I don't think there's going to be any lack of opportunities for our students to get to job sites. So I think there's a hunger from the employers to have the type of students that we're going to train come into their workforce. And, you know, ultimately, I would hope, and I don't know, but I would hope that there's some incentives to, you know, make sure that we know that there are MWB requirements for state jobs.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you got to have a certain amount of contractors who meet those requirements. I would hope that there, you know, at some point in the future, there's requirements for the employees that are working for those contractors as well, right? But we will be prepared to create trained students who are going to be able to fill those jobs.
Well, then the follow-up with this question then, and you actually touched upon it, but we didn't have a chance to get into it, then the same problem that, you know, these companies are having, getting employees, getting the message to the right people who have the right interest. How about from the EOC standpoint, how are you going to, you know, I mean, I'm sure you do this with all your programs, of course. How do you get the message to the right spot?
That's a great question. One of our strengths, right? Our strengths are our infrastructure. And our infrastructure is very strong in that foundational academic review, right? We've got instructors, we've got courses, we can help people, increase their levels of competency in all the core subject areas. Another strength that we have in terms of infrastructure is our admissions and recruitment. We have an excellent admissions and recruitment team. Our admissions supervisor has been in the field for many, many years and has been in the Buffalo community doing admissions for other institutions. Between him and myself, right? Like, so my background with Erie County, with the Mad Urban Center, I've worked with just scores and scores of nonprofit organizations and have developed relationships with, you know, the leadership and staff at many of those organizations. That's where the people are, right?
Right.
So we go to where the people are and help inform them on what opportunities we have. I don't work day to day in our admissions department, but what I do know is that we're not limited by their ability to recruit.
Hmm.
We're limited by our capacity to be able to provide programs for people to get involved in. Like, if I've got seats, if I've got new programs, like the ones that we're developing, and I've got seats for people to fill, I have the utmost confidence that our admissions department is able to fill those seats, because it kind of goes back to the essential nature of the EOC that I was describing. It's not... People are looking for the opportunities that we are able to provide. And if we get out there and we describe them and we connect with people and we make it easy for them to connect with us, our seats, our classes are full. That's the experience that I've had. So it's comforting as an executive director to know that if we can build new programs, then we will have people in those seats. That's how I approach it today, is with the confidence that we can fill the seats because of the experience that I've had with those folks and what I've seen them be able to deliver. But it just comes back to meeting people where they are. There's a place for advertising, there's a place for billboards and bus wraps and things like that. But if you go to where people are and you tell them what we have to offer and we make it easy for them to take advantage, it makes all the difference.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits, featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
Public Media is more than Morning Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Buffalo Toronto Public Media creates digital series to ignite curiosity in young learners, free lesson plans, videos and training for teachers and parents, and events to empower the minds of our community's next generation. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're talking with Ben Hilligus today on What's Next, the executive director of the EOC here in Buffalo. Fascinating conversation regarding the Kensington project, or the potential Kensington project. We'll leave it at potential for the moment.
That's right.
But that's one very specific but very exciting opportunity. Maybe just talk about some other things that are developing as well that might help somebody else who is looking for a whole different path. Because, you know, let's be honest, if everybody wanted to be in the trades, they wouldn't be looking for workers right now, right?
I'd be remiss if I didn't add one more thing to the trades conversation before I move on. And it's a parallel thing that's happening. Another Syracuse program that's being replicated in Buffalo. In this case, it's not DOT, it's Empire State Development. replicating a program in Syracuse that is a trades pre-apprenticeship program and direct entry, right? So ESD is trying to replicate a program in Syracuse that they have funded out there that provides an exposure-based curriculum program to folks in a pre-apprenticeship setting. They learn everything that they need to know about all of the various trades, and then they are connected directly to the trade unions for apprenticeships. This involves, obviously, the trade unions being on board and invested and engaging, and their ESD has been very successful so far in getting the trade unions engaged and interested in doing this. So that is going to happen. The EOC is definitely going to be very involved in probably providing the pre-apprenticeship curriculum, but it's a very exciting, transformative opportunity for our community, and I just wanted to.
Yeah, no, it's. I mean, and it's interesting and again enlightening to hear because we've been talking about the lack of workers and the jobs that are going to be there, whether because people are retiring or whatever the case may be, or the economy is expanding as we'd like to hope that it will continue to do so. But it is interesting to know that there are these state agencies that are actually doing real groundwork. It's not just a press conference and a couple of releases and put up a website.
Yeah, and I've been observing and witnessing and a part of the groundwork, and it's amazing to see, honestly. And just to your previous point,
so you really see people who are really analyzing the process and finding ways to do the job better.
We can't do direct entry pre-apprenticeship programs without the trade unions being on board.
Right.
And you kind of indicated earlier that that's been challenging in the past, right? But the folks from Empire State Development have actually been successful in bringing them to the table. And I think it truly represents what could be a real paradigm shift in getting folks into apprenticeships and allowing them to have, really, really family-sustaining careers for the rest of their lives. And we're just thrilled to be a part of it. It's still in early stages, but it is based on Syracuse model that is successful. And I see a real commitment to it happening here. And the EOC is just thrilled to be a part of it.
All right, so we were ready to expand when we grabbed onto that into maybe just a couple of other partnerships or programs that you see changing that might offer a whole different type of a perspective here.
So I'm very happy to have the opportunity to kind of shout out some of the partners that we've been working with. ECC, SUNY Erie, has been a tremendous partner, and Dr. Sagai, the president, has been a great ally and someone who has a real commitment to finding ways for the EOC and the community college to work together, which are developing pathways in allied health fields and possibly technology. So we have ongoing conversations, but that would also kind of represent a paradigm shift, because what we're talking about is the potential opportunity for students to take classes at the EOC for free, right? That could be credit bearing at SUNY Erie or another SUNY institution, right? So that's unique. That's not something that happens very often.
Okay.
And then also, many people go to a community college and are not prepared to take the 101 level courses,
sure.
Right?
Yep.
And in some cases, they end up taking remedial courses and they're using financial aid in order to pay for those things. And there's a limit to how much financial aid you get over the course of your lifetime.
Right.
So you're kind of burning through the resources that you have available in order to get to the beginning. But the EOC can do those same things for free at the EOC. So we can develop pathways where folks are taking those remedial, and I don't like that word, but I don't have a better one.
Understood.
Right now.
But the things that you need to enter and get into regular college.
And we can do it in an intentional way where we know that what they're taking is going to prepare them for what they need to do at ECC by having those conversations and planning in advance. So that's something we're very excited about and continuing to develop what that will look like. But it will happen. Other partnerships. So we have a CNA program that is going to start very soon. In terms of expanding and enhancing, as I was talking about, where we've been strong in vocational programs has been allied health. So while we want to add trades and other pathways that are, you know, very different. We also want to expand on our allied health programs because it's something, again, that we've done very well for a long time. So certified nursing assistant is a program that we've offered in the past, but not for maybe 10 years, something we wanted to do again. And we've been able to develop a partnership with Lineage Healthcare Group, which is an umbrella nonprofit under which are a few care facilities,
okay,
including Greenfield and Weinberg. Mm. And they have had a longstanding relationship with the Women's Foundation of Western New York, together providing training and wraparound support services for women who are interested in entering allied health fields, and specifically through the CNA door, right?
Okay.
And they've been doing it for a while, and one of the partners that was providing the clinical space stopped being a part of the partnership. So I had been speaking to the Women's Foundation, and all of a sudden they needed an educational partner, right? Guess who's a great educational partner? It's the Buffalo EOC.
Right.
So together, in a short period of time, we've been able to put together what is going to be a very strong CNA training program that when the students come in on day one, they are already hired by the care facilities.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to be paid for all of their training, and they're going to be guaranteed a job when they graduate. So while they're getting the training, they're getting support from the Women's Foundation, they're getting the support that's already built into the EOC, they're getting paid, there's a whole assessment process that determines what other needs they may have, and then the Women's Foundation is able to provide for some of those needs, and then they have a job and a career. And CNA is tough work, and it's the highest paying work, but it is an entry level job in healthcare. And if someone's interested in healthcare, then it's a good opportunity to begin to learn about the field and potentially move on to another. So I say that to say,
yeah,
the EOC wants to be able to provide people the opportunity to upskill as well, right? We primarily train people short-term certifications for entry-level jobs. But I don't want to leave it at that. I want to be able to provide opportunities for people to advance while they're already in their jobs. And one opportunity for that as it relates to CNA is an LPN. LPN would be the next appropriate step and or credential for someone who has a CNA. And that's what we're going to do next. We're going to develop an LPN program that will allow both people that we've trained as CNA and then people who are CNAs or people who have no experience in allied health to get that next job that allows them to continue to move up, you know, the ladder, both economically and professionally. It's not typical, right? We're just training people for these entry-level jobs, right, and we get them placed and we get them employed.
Have you seen other EOCs that have been able to do that?
You know, there may be, okay, but I'm not familiar. Right, this is something that's kind of specific to us and
but
our
you just believe you have a sense. You and your staff have a sense that it's time to. I mean, it's great to provide entry level opportunities, any type of opportunities. But like you said, when it comes to, you know, working in nursing facilities, you know, my parents were in there, and I saw lots of people working tremendously hard, doing very difficult work, and some people probably, and you know, age wise, probably should have been doing something a little bit differently. So you sense that there's an opportunity to be able to make this a reality.
I think it's there's an opportunity and there's an obligation. I think we're responsible for making sure that we are providing the opportunities for people to continue to grow professionally and continue to grow from an economic standpoint. And in terms of CNA to LPN, it's just a natural progression. We have the infrastructure. I think we have a moral obligation, responsibility might be too strong of language, but that's how I feel. We want to make sure that we are really giving people all of the preparation that they need in order to, you know, really achieve transformation and being able to take care of their families long term.
We talk about a lot of the positives, and that's one of the reasons why I'm sure you wanted to come in here and chat. But at the same time, I think you've kind of opened up a little bit here of just maybe also, I want to utilize the word frustrations, but there is a reality that, you know, I'm sure people they want, you know, there's always that desire to want to do more, right? And we want to do, you know, whatever the case may be. But I guess what I'm wondering if some of the people that maybe aren't moving forward, are not maybe finding the satisfaction at the EOC, or maybe you've heard about this in the past. I guess I'm asking for kind of more of a general conversation about just that idea that, okay, you know, opportunities are, that's what we're looking for, and that's what, you know, we're all about. But at the same time, between your social work and just knowing people over the time, like, well, is that really what I want to be doing with my life, yeah. I guess is the question.
You kind of hit the nail on the head when you referred to my social work background, right?
Yeah.
Because this is not a foreign kind of environment for me, right?
Sure.
Working in an area where people have challenges has been my life's work, right? And it's tough, right? It's just there's a certain kind of level of expectation that I think you always have to have, just knowing that you're not always going to be successful, right? And that some challenges, whether individually, structurally, systemically, are very difficult, if not impossible, to overcome. That doesn't mean we don't try all the time, you know, in every single instance, because it takes, it's almost a war of attrition, right? You have to really apply pressure constantly in order for those breakthroughs to occur. And again, whether that's individually, structurally, or systemically, you always have to be pushing, because if you relax or you take a step back, you're going to lose people. You're going to have people who slip through the cracks. And we do have people who slip through the cracks all the time, despite all of our best efforts. And we spend, in any setting where you're, whether it's a public school system or the juvenile justice system or child welfare, no matter how, and I've been a part of all of those systems, and I've sat in rooms with very intelligent, educated people in leadership positions, and we talk and think and plan and research on how best to improve these processes so we are not losing people and so the people are having the best possible outcomes. And we see the results every day, right? And those results are both positive and negative.
Right.
The results are good things do happen, and the results are there continues to be poverty, and there continues to be people who suffer, and there continues to be child abuse, neglect, and maltreatment, and there continues to be people who are not achieving, you know, their potential and their goals. But I that's what I love to do, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
So it's, the EOC is very similar to those other systems that I've worked in that we're working very hard in talking every day about how we can make sure we catch as many people as we possibly can before they fall through the cracks, and that, you know, we get them to the other side, and that we continue to have relationships with them even when they've done everything right?
Right.
They've been successful, they've completed, and they've graduated and walked across the stage, which is also something I want to talk about, because we have my first commencement coming up.
Oh, okay.
And that is, that's, you know, despite all of the things we just talked about, we're going to have a commencement on May 15th at the Center for the Arts, UB. I'm sure you're familiar.
Sure.
Beautiful building.
Absolutely.
We will likely have 120 students minimum who are going to graduate, and they are all welcome to bring their families and their friends. There are no tickets for the event, so we will have a very robust audience, and it's going to be my first commencement. We've got a lot of wonderful people who are attending from Albany, and the provost, Scott A. Weber, will be in attendance. Our speaker is going to be our new, the EOC's district new council person, Leah Halton Pope, who's the majority leader of the Buffalo City Council, and I'm thrilled that she accepted our invitation to do that. But the whole intention, Jay, is for it just to be a party.
We want
to celebrate these students and their accomplishments. We're going to have a reception afterwards in the atrium with music and a photo booth and food, and allow families to come together and really, you know, soak in the accomplishment, the achievement, this truly transformational thing that has occurred. And that, you know, I am so much looking forward to that.
Right.
And it just is, you know, it's like, it's not the cherry on top. It's the whole ball game, Jay.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
Like no matter what, everything we've been through, and it's it makes it all worthwhile.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
This is the Buffalo-Toronto Public Media History Bite, bringing you a peek into significant historical events for the week of May 6th through 12th. I'm your host, Abby Mylock. On 172 Guilford Street, Buffalo, New York, an explosion at the ice plant had killed one person and injured 20. The accident was presented on the Buffalo News on May 7th, 1975. At the Buffalo Museum of Science, Kellogg Observatory opened on May 8, 1930. At the Kellogg Observatory, a full restored London telescope lets a new generation of explorers view the skies once again. The telescope is powered by state-of-the-art mapping technology. A new topic had hit the Buffalo Morning Express on May 9, 1855. This topic was baseball. This was the first time in Buffalo history that this sport was mentioned in the press. You've been listening to the Buffalo-Toronto Public Media History Bite. Discover more stories about Western New York's past on the Buffalo History Museum's website. Learn more at buffalohistory.org. For Buffalo-Toronto Public Media, I'm Abby Mylock.
Hey, is this thing on?
Test, test, 1, 2.
Sounds great. Let's go.
The podcast world is overflowing with more than 750,000 podcasts to choose from.
But for great local podcasts, you can now go to one place, the new Amplify BTPM Pods app. Here you can discover content produced in Western New York and Southern Ontario, our own backyard.
With a wide variety of genres to choose from, there is something for everyone.
Listen to the best independently produced podcasts in the region anywhere, anytime.
Download the free Amplify BTPM Pods app wherever you get your apps and begin exploring your local podcast community now.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're talking with Ben Hilligus today on What's Next, the executive director of the EOC here in Buffalo. I'm glad you kind of segued a little bit into a little more positive there, and I do appreciate your candor with my previous question. So let's go, and I think we did touch upon this a little bit when you were here before. The stereotypes, the attitudes that are holding, that are providing or proving to be obstacles for people. You see it, the generalizations of humanity that go on. I'm sure you see it, and I know you understand, like you said, the potential of people. But what about those? What are those things that you think people? Someone like you, who's been on the front line here in so many different capacities of working to try to help, bring equity to our society. What are their attitudes that you say, boy, we've got to get rid of these attitudes? And I'm not talking about the people that you're helping. I'm talking about the people, just the general societal attitudes that you think are hindrances to what can be achieved.
Well, that's a big question.
Yes, it is. We are running down
on time.
That's
bigger than the Kensington, for sure. You touched on equity, and that's what it's all about. That's what the EOC is. We are a free program, right? We are a free program for people who are income eligible. There is a reason that we are a free program for people who are income eligible. There is a reason that Arthur O'Eve, in the 1970s, in the middle of the ongoing civil rights movement, created the EOCs in New York State. And that was to provide opportunity to people who had been marginalized, who are marginalized, because of intentional policies and institutional racism, so they could have the opportunity to have the same opportunities that their peers have, right? We talked about this the last time I was here, and, you know, the kind of analogy that I made then was equity versus equality in Buffalo related to higher education. Everyone in Buffalo can access higher education. That is equality. Not everyone in Buffalo has the same ability to access higher education, and that is equity. So what the EOC does and is supposed to do and was created in order to do is level the playing field, give people the opportunity to get to a place where they can access the same thing that other people have been able to access because of the status of their birth, basically, right? So in terms of attitudes, understanding that makes sense, understanding that is the only, it's not unfair that some people get free vocational training programs. It is unfair that some people need free vocational training programs. And I would say that's if people could understand the difference between equity and equality and be okay with providing additional resources to folks who have been intentionally left behind, then wow, what we could achieve in this community, in this country. And that's not to say that there are not many, many, many people who believe that. I was downstairs not that long ago for the Say Yes, Think Take White Rage event.
Yes.
300 people in that room, probably. Amazing panelists on stage. Obviously, you know, kind of a like-minded audience and maybe a little bit of preaching to the choir. But nonetheless, the power of having all of those people, leaders from this community, from all walks of life, all races, all different fields, sitting there listening to brilliant panelists talk about white rage and what that means. If that doesn't tell you that we've got a core of people who understand and are willing to do what's necessary in order to, you know, level the playing field and create equity for people in this community, then I don't know what would, right?
So you have hope?
I do. Have to. I mean, that's wouldn't do it if I didn't. And it's not hard to find hope out there, you know? I see it every day. And yeah.
And if somebody wants to find out more what's possible at the EOC, what do they do?
They would go to the website, which is Jay, it's not coming to me. I apologize.
Okay.
There's some backslashes and some UB, but just Google Buffalo EOC. It'll take you right there. It tells you everything you need to know about our programs. It also will provide you a phone number. I would absolutely encourage anybody to call because the people on the other end are wonderful staff of the EOC who really are there in order to provide services to the folks who need our services. And I would have the utmost confidence that if anybody called, they would get exactly the type of customer service experience and information that they need and deserve.
And what about partners? We've talked about partners a little bit here. What about potential partners, the next wave of partners that might be coming to the EOC?
Honestly, there's really no limit to the amount of partnerships that we can have. And that's how this community is going to continue to move forward, by organizations working together in a coordinated way, right? Not working across purposes, but working together, being intentional. And I see that all the time. And my phone has continued to ring.
They're finding you.
They are finding me. And our plate is relatively full with the new programs that we're launching right now. But there are things coming behind the new programs and more exciting opportunities. That's the way I'm wired, is to work with partners, to collaborate, to find opportunities to together have the most impact and the most benefit. And you know, if you work together and you're not really concerned about attribution, you can get a lot done.
Ben Hillegas is the executive director of the EOC. He's with us on What's Next today. Ben, thanks again for joining us.
Jay, it's been my pleasure. Next year.
Next year.
All right.
We'll see how that LPM program's going.
All right.
We'll hold you to that one. This has been What's Next.